Welcome to Not That Girl Anymore, part of the Liminal Network. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon. This is more than a podcast. It's a sisterhood. We're reclaiming our voices, our worth, and our lives, one story, one truth, one brave step at a time. Hey, friends. Before we get started, just a quick note. This episode includes real stories and conversations about trauma, abuse, and healing. Please listen with care and take breaks if you need to. These stories are shared with full consent and reflect each guest's lived experience. They're told for the purpose of truth-telling, awareness, and healing, never to shame, blame, or attack anyone. If something in this episode brings up hard emotions for you, I encourage you to reach out for support. You don't have to carry it alone. Hey, friends. Welcome back to Not That Girl Anymore. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon, trauma therapist and coach, and the founder here of Embrace Your Brave. Last week, Ashley started to share her story with us. And if you haven't heard part one yet, I encourage you to definitely go back and listen to that. You'll want to hear that first. In that episode, Ashley shared the raw and heartbreaking truth of growing up in a home marked by fear, control, and survival. Today, we pick up right where we left off, but this time, the light starts to break through. In this conversation, Ashley opens up about what healing looked like for her, what it means to take her power back, to invest in the little girl who never got to dream, and to finally start meeting her own needs. It's tender, it's honest, and it's full of redemption. So take a deep breath, settle in, and let's step into the second half of Ashley's story, the part where she begins to rise.
I decided, I was like, I'm going to do something for God.
Really?
Oddly enough, I was like, I'm going to do something for God. So I went to a Bible college that next year. And they actually did a good job of like healing old wounds. They talked about father wounds. They talked about mother wounds. They talked about, things that you don't normally hear about. And so I kind of got like a little bit of a taste, which was really good. I needed that.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I got to move away because I went to South Carolina. And so I moved away from, you know, Lafayette, which was everybody knew our family. Everybody knew what had been going on. Most people knew what had happened to us, what was happening. And so it was nice for me to just kind of get away and be able to know people, get to know people that knew nothing about my family. They knew nothing about my situation. And they didn't have anything, you know, they couldn't, I felt like I wasn't judged because I was like, I'd gone through so much.
Yeah.
And I felt like people just kind of viewed me through this lens of like, oh, she's so broken. She's so, you know, just everything I've been through. It's like, how can you be a whole person? How can you still be strong? How can you still smile, you know, or, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it was refreshing to be away and to be able to get to know new people.
Get like a fresh start. So you went to South Carolina?
I did. Yeah.
What was in South Carolina?
They had, so it was called South Carolina School of Leadership. It was like a discipleship college at a church, which had its goods and bads. It was ultra controlling, which was something I didn't like. They like made us like delete all the men off our social media. We couldn't talk to guys. So they had very strict dress codes. We couldn't date. There was just a lot of rules, which was kind of like, I was kind of used to that because I was like, oh, like this is just like my family.
Right.
So at the time, I didn't realize until later on that how strict it was. I was like, oh, wow, like, that was really strict. We weren't allowed to listen to anything but Christian music too. TV, same thing. You couldn't watch any like R-rated films. Just craziness. But I did meet a lot of really amazing people there. And you know, it's funny too because I always hung out with like the outcasts group too. Like even though I wasn't doing anything bad, I wasn't like, you know, same as in high school. I wasn't like rebelling. I wasn't breaking rules. I was following all the rules. But I just loved the outcasts. They weren't perfect. They weren't worried about all the how things looked or, you know, all of those things that I never really cared about. Like they were just really good people. And then, so I did that for a year. And I applied for a second year, and they were like, we think that you would be better. They were like, we'd love to have you, basically. But they denied me, which was a huge blessing. And they're like, we think you would do better in a mission school. They gave me a book for Heidi Baker. And they're like, we think you'd do really well in this mission school in Africa. And so, yeah. So I applied for that. I left, I think like 3 months later. I'd gone home for like 3 months, and then I went to Africa for 3.5 months. I lived on an orphanage base. We had like a classroom. It was like classic latrines, which for anyone who doesn't know what a latrine is, it's just a hole in the ground. And that's your toilet. And there was bucket showers where you have a bucket on the ground and you stand in the bucket and you have like a cup or whatever, and pour water over yourself and you wash yourself and then you pour water over yourself. And that's how you take a shower. There's no running water. We virtually had no electricity. Like the electricity was like always out. But I mean, I loved it. I got to experience like the beautiful, rich culture of Mozambique. Like I went there thinking like, oh, I'm gonna teach these people so much, and like they're gonna be able to learn so much from me. And I learned so much from them. So I was like, their lives are so simple. They live in mud huts, which I got to sleep in, and I was like, that was even a whole other thing. Because I was like, wow, like this is what it's like to live in a mud hut. And they were just such the most genuine, beautiful, creative, just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. And I was barefoot too the whole time. I didn't wear shoes, which everyone else thought it was odd that I didn't wear shoes, but I was just like, I mean, I'm a country girl. I'm like, I love being barefoot. So if I can get away with never wearing shoes, like I'm gonna do it. So I didn't wear shoes the whole time. And I mean, we lived across the street from the beach, so I would go to the beach and we'd go snorkeling and I'd go swimming. I would love to go in the village and like explore all the little shopping centers they had. They had like these, which they were basically like a table with like a low shaggy tent made out of like cloth on top. And I used to go and I'd explore all the village like shops, and I would just look at all the cool stuff they had, all the art, all the clothing. And I just found it all so fascinating. Like I was just like, this is so different. This is so beautiful. This is so rich, vibrant, like the culture and language and just all of the things.
I can hear just in your voice how you talk about it. Like you cherished it so much. Like
Loved it.
you were so fully present and with your feet on the ground, bare feet on the ground, like just experiencing the whole thing with like so much gratitude. I can hear when you talk about it how much that meant, how much that meant to you.
It was such a sweet time. Such a sweet time. Just being taken out of my world and into another world, and then seeing how just beautiful and how wonderful these people were, you know, that had nothing, that, you know, or what we would consider nothing, right? But they had everything, because we get so distracted with all the things that we have, you know, that sometimes we forget about that the point of all this is to have relationships. And that's what they have. They don't have all those distractions, but they have each other. And I just remember just being like, this is so beautiful.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Wow. That's amazing, Nash. Yeah, they have what matters.
Yeah.
They have love, you know? They have joy. They have each other.
Yeah.
How do you see that that's impacted you? Just even now today, like, I'm sure it sounds like it was a life-changing experience for you.
It was. It definitely was. I think it's just made me just appreciate the little things. Like, just helped me to appreciate, like, not, because I feel like in our culture, there's so many people that just want to, like, have, you know, the successful career, the nice house, the nice car. And I've even chased that myself. You know, I feel like that part of my life helped me just to value the people, to value that connection with yourself, to value art even, because that's a huge part of, like, African culture is, like, their art and their music and their dancing. And, like, this part of our culture where we feel like we have to be so, like, as Christians, we feel like we have to be, like, so, like, put together and so, like, you know, you can't dance a certain way. You can't listen to certain music. You can't drink, you know, you can't whatever. And it's like, you have to have this perfect persona of who you are. And I just feel like God doesn't care about those things. He cares about the heart. Like, he even talks about that in the Bible with the Pharisees, how they were whitewashed tombs, but they were dead, death and decay on the inside. And it's like, you can have this beautiful performance, you know, of Christianity where you're not smoking, you're not drinking, you're not whatever, but you're going home and you're beating your wife, you know, or you're going home and you're mentally abusing your wife, or you're, you know, abusing your kids, or you're being ugly to your coworkers, or you're being a cheat and a lie in your work, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's something, if I could say it, that's something I took away, was like, just to really care about the heart and to really care about who you are as a person. And what am I really doing? What am I really saying? Like, what am I putting out into the world?
Yeah.
You know, not to be perfect, but just to be like, am I being intentional about what I'm putting out with my kids? Am I the same person when I'm with my kids and I'm with the world? I feel like I'm better with my family and my kids than I am out in the world. But
yeah.
That's just because I'm like, but, and I'm like, that's a win for me. You know, that's a win, because if I can be a good mom, a really good mom, a really good wife, and a good friend to my close friends, that's good enough for me. Like, I don't need anything else.
Yeah. Wow. And that just makes so much sense in your story. You know?
Yeah, it does.
So what happened after that?
So after that, I went to Micronesia the next year. For 3 months again. We did like a survival training. And
you had good training for this, for survival.
So it was basically the training. The point of the training was to be able to go reach villages and places that you couldn't reach by road or by just flying into the place. Like, you'd have to, like, hike to the village or whatever. Like, it would be remote places. And I remember when I got there, so they told us to bring a tent. Okay, but they also told us to bring a tent to Africa. And most people didn't bring a tent.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh yeah, like somebody else is going to bring a tent, because that's what we did in Africa. And like three other girls slept in my tent and it was fine. You know, that's what we did. We all shared tents. And so I'm like, oh, I'm not going to bring tent. Like I want to save space in my bag. You know, put some other stuff in there. And so I got there and it was just a platform and a roof, like basically a pavilion where we were sleeping.
Oh, okay.
So thankfully I had a mosquito net, and I grew up camping. That was another thing with my family. My family always, we're always camping, always hiking. We were outdoorsy people.
Okay.
So this, I was just like, oh, this sounds like fun, you know. And I was
You got
18.
this.
Well, I was 19, and so like that is fun when you're 19. I don't know that I could do that now.
Right.
Right. So I was like, oh, this is gonna be so fun. And so it was gorgeous. So I'd wake up in the morning and it was just like this beautiful blue ocean. The ocean was probably like 3 feet away from my bed.
No way.
And so I'd wake up every morning and I'd see this beautiful blue ocean and these big green lush hills over in the distance. And it was just like absolutely breathtaking. So I didn't mind at all. except when it rained, because then it would rain on me. But I was on the edge too. I was on the end.
My goodness.
So we did, and we had bucket showers there too. They did like a hose that we would like use, and there was a bucket on the ground, and yeah, we took bucket showers, and we did some survival training. So like we went out on an island with just rice, and we had to like catch food. We had to make a shelter. We had to figure out like how to basically survive on this island with nothing else on it. And
Wow.
then
You were like made for this.
and we also went to we did like 3 days, 2 nights in the mountains, where we hiked the tallest mountain in Micronesia. And the first night we slept in a cave. And like no tents, nothing, just like slept in a cave with a blanket. And I remember I burnt my shoe too, because like our shoes were all wet. Because if you're hiking, it's a rainforest. So like when you're hiking through the rainforest, there's a lot of like swampy areas. And so my shoes had gotten wet. So I like tried to dry them off by the fire, and like half of my shoe like melted off on the side. Yes. And then so we like hiked over a waterfall, or over a river, and then up a waterfall. And then the second night we made a shelter with some palm trees.
This sounds like that show, like, right? Survivor.
Survivor, yeah.
It kind of sounds.
And then somebody caught like some shrimp in the river nearby, but I wasn't a shrimp eater, so I didn't eat any shrimp. I just ate rice. And
Okay.
we hiked back the next day. And I mean, I just enjoyed so much just being outside, being in the middle of nowhere, enjoying nature, just like reminding myself that I could do all these things. I loved it. I love nature though, still to this day.
I can tell. It comes.
Yeah.
It exudes from you. You're very excited about that. That's all.
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. It was not comfortable. It was the worst sleep I've ever gotten. I'll say that. My 32-year-old body could not handle that cave in that palm tree like shelter this day. I'd wake up the next morning, I probably wouldn't sleep. Because I remember it was terrible sleep because it was so hard. And I remember the palm tree, like the middle of the palm tree has like a hard part, and that part was just kind of like going through your back. But
Nice.
when you're 19, that's like nothing.
I've survived much worse things,
Yeah.
right? You're probably like, oh, I got this.
Yeah, and you don't know what pain is yet, so you know.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. Okay. So you had some like really amazing opportunities and just life-changing experiences, it sounds like.
And I feel like my relationship with God was reconnected. at those places too. You know, even though looking back too, I'm like, there was some of the things that was like a little bit extreme. Like they were very, I guess, eccentric, you know, Christians. They were like, but I still feel like I learned so much from even Heidi Baker, you know, and her view of God is just so beautiful. She's so just her big thing is like love. Like that God loves us and that like he wants a relationship with us and that he wants to be close to us and like and that God is love and like just that was so refreshing to me and that was so what I needed in that time in my life. Because I just gotten this message that God was just like condemning and he was, you know, looking down at us, frowning and, you know, just constantly unhappy. And he was condoning just like these atrocious things, you know. And so for me to go there and just experience that, like, oh, God is love and he's loving and he's kind and he wants a relationship with us and he's our father and just all of those things was just like such a refreshing beauty.
Like a corrective experience and what you have been longing for, I'm sure.
Yes. And I've had many, many since then too, of just like, you know, just reconnecting back to what I believe Christianity is and what I believe God is and how I, you know, the rules that we put on Christianity and how he's really just, he doesn't really care about those things. Like he doesn't. He just doesn't. I think we put so much pressure on ourselves to feel like God is, you know, just having all these rules and regulations on us when he's really just not. He just wants to love us for who we are.
That's right.
And he wants us as we are. He doesn't want us to just like fix ourselves and then go to him and, you know, be this perfect little Christian, you know?
Like you have to perform for his love and his acceptance. But yeah, my favorite definition of the gospel that I learned in grad school through one of my professors is the simplicity of the gospel is receive God's love and give it away. The end, right? No other rules, no other. Receive God's love. And it makes so much sense in healing because you got to receive it first before you can give it away. You got to receive that love for every part of you. And then when you actually do receive that love and feel that love, you can't help but to give that
It's
away.
true. And it just seeps into you and you just like, yeah, it's just a transformative experience when you really just let God love you, you know, and let go of all of the versions that you thought you knew about him.
It makes you know, it makes you kind of sad for the way the perception of God that we had or that you were given, even, and you're like, man, if more people think that that's who God is, then that's devastating. How do we get more people to know about this God, like this loving God? And you know, and I think part of that is being that way, like being love, you know, which I see that so much in you, Ashley. And it just amazes me to hear all the things that you've been through. And like, here you are living it up across the world somewhere, just like a happy little, you know, a child living her best childhood life a couple years later, you know, like even after you experience so much trauma, like so much traumatic experience back home, but you almost probably living in a different world completely, even in your mind. You got some separation from home.
All of that. Yes, it was the best thing that ever happened to me, and it helped me to find really figure out who I was. You know, I had time, and I feel like that's something we're kind of constantly doing as humans, anyways. You know, like you turn 30 and then you're like, who am I? And then I feel like it happens again when you turn 40. And like, you know, I've heard at least it happens again and again and again. Because we're constantly changing and evolving. But I can say that is one thing I'm thankful for, because I don't think I knew who I was before that. I don't think I ever had the chance to really express myself and really figure out who I was outside of the caretaking role that I was kind of given, or the scapegoat, or the invisible child role that I was given. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Discovering some of the things you love, some of the things that make you happy and make you come alive, you know?
Yeah. And what does religion mean to me? What does God mean to me? What does being a Christian mean to me?
That's right.
I get to decide that. And that's something that I didn't know. I thought I had to follow, you know, everybody else's version. And then, you know, because that was the right way. That was the best way. And it was a popular way. But it never felt right to me. It just like, it never felt real. It never felt genuine.
Yeah.
You know?
It didn't fit. It didn't fit in your own story, in your own heart. That's not it.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's see, what happened after that? What, how old were you at this time?
So when I went to Micronesia, I was 19. And then I met my husband, which I'm still married to this day. We actually, our 11-year anniversary is on Saturday. So
happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah, so we met a month, like, well, we met before that, but we started dating after I got home.
Okay.
And then we, you know, like most Christians at that time, we got married young and quick. There's something that happens in the church.
Yes.
I don't suggest it.
Me neither, by the way.
Something that just happened in the church and we didn't think anything of it. So we got married about 6 months after, or we got engaged, sorry, 6 months after we started dating. We had known each other for about a year before that, but we'd only been dating for 6 months. And then we got married a year after we started dating. And, you know, things were good. Like our marriage was pretty okay. I think we both just didn't know. We were doing our best. We didn't know what a healthy relationship looked like. We didn't know what healthy communication looked like. And so I think there was a lot of just like passive aggressiveness, a lot of just, I didn't know what I needed and I didn't know how to ask for what I needed. And so I think just growing up in my family, I just kind of like needs in my family were like, if I told my mom I needed like a school uniform or whatever, like I would be hounded on and I would be like called names. I would be attacked for like having a need, basically. And so for me going into my marriage, I kind of took that same approach of like, I can't have a need. I was just so afraid. And then if I would ask for something, I would kind of assume that he would respond the same way. And so marriage was hard. You know, it was very hard for us. And it was good. Like it was probably average. You know, I think a lot of people, like the more I talk about it, the more I realize that a lot of people are struggling with the same things that we were struggling with. Just the lack of communication, the lack of just not knowing what your needs are, how to ask for those needs, you know, how to be respectful, respect each other's autonomy. Like hear each other's side out. Because that was a big thing too. We'd always go into arguments trying to win. You know, like I would be trying to win, he would be trying to win. And then, you know, that was it. Like we weren't just trying to go as equals, just hear each other's sides and just be able to empathize with each other and just be there for each other. I had started therapy.
Yeah. Okay, wait, tell me about that. How did you decide that?
So I decided to go to therapy because we found out that my youngest, our third child, had a rare autoimmune disease. And he wasn't eating. He wasn't like no solid foods. I had to make, and the insurance companies, because we didn't have a diagnosis, we didn't know what was going on. We were doing feeding therapy. We'd done a frenulectomy. We had done like all the things to try to figure out. We were constantly at the doctor trying to figure out what was going on with my son. And because we didn't have like a diagnosis or anything, his formula wasn't covered under our insurance. And so I, with the help of a dietitian, I made all of his food in a blender.
Of course
So every
you
single day I would go and I would boil carrots, I would boil chicken, I would boil whatever it was, and then I would throw it all in a blender with like some protein powder and some other stuff, some
did.
veggies, some spinach in there or whatever, and his like a little vitamin in there too. And I would give him that every single day. And we like cut the nipple because he also wouldn't eat food like through his mouth. And so the only way he would eat food was through a bottle. And he was about, this happened until he was like 2.5. And we went to a doctor in Baton Rouge, and he told us, he was like, yeah, I think it's either EoE, or he said it was another diagnosis that I can't remember the name of. But he was like, the only reason why he wouldn't be eating is because of these two things. And so we did the scope and we found out that it was EoE, which is short for eosinophilic esophagitis. And it basically causes narrowing and strictures and pus-filled sacs inside of his throat. And so food would get stuck. It was really, really painful for him to swallow, especially solid food. And so that's why, because he was so inflamed and it was so small, that it was really hard for him to even just swallow. And that's why he was on a strictly liquid diet for such a long time.
That had to be so scary.
Yes, it was. It was so scary. I was just like, what is happening? Like, I just didn't understand. Like, we'd go to feeding therapy and nothing was helping. Like, am I not doing what he needs? But I was doing everything I could. There was nothing else that I could do for him. So when we found out he had EoE, that was like a relief and like a big burden at the same time, because we were like, what is EoE? Like, never heard of that. And it's very rare. Most doctors and nurses don't even know about it. Like, as we go to the hospital, especially in the beginning, we'd go to the hospital on a regular basis when he'd have issues. He'd get sick a lot. He would just have trouble breathing too. So he would get a simple virus from somebody else, a cold, and his oxygen was really low and he'd have to be hospitalized overnight. Just things like that were happening too. And that's all a part of his autoimmune disease. And so, so we were just trying to figure out what EoE was. And so my husband, being a nurse, he did a bunch of research. He found out about the, six food elimination diet and all of the things that we could do to cure it naturally. And so now he's in remission. Thankfully, he's 5 now. He's healthy. He's eating solid food. He's doing amazing. He also had like speech problems because he was like eating from a bottle and not eating solid food for so long. His mouth muscles were underdeveloped, which is something you never think about as like, as a parent. Like, you never think about, oh, like him not having solid food, like that actually is like building up those muscles that help him to speak, help him with his speech, help him with just all of the. It affects the body in so many ways that you don't even realize. And so, so he was in speech for a long time. He's doing amazing now. I mean, you'd never guess. He's still on a strict diet, but he never guess that it was that sick. And thankfully, we are like hardly ever in the hospital anymore. And we've been able to fix it all through diet change.
That's amazing. And because you're such an amazing mom, that you're so attuned to your baby and took good care of him.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, but that was what got you into therapy, just like the stress from all that?
Yes. So that's what got me into therapy. By the end of that, I was just so exhausted. and just depressed. I'd started anxiety medication because I had so much anxiety. I was just so scared of going to the hospital. I was so scared of, you know, my kid being sick again or something happening and just having no control. Cause that was like the whole thing. I had no control over. I was doing everything I could, and then he still wasn't doing well for such a long time. And so it just makes you feel helpless, you know. I felt
Absolutely.
so hopeless.
Yeah.
And I started seeing Don, and we started to unpack some of that, and there was some stuff with my marriage that was going on too. And that really opened my eyes. So I started to realize that my needs mattered, that I mattered, that I didn't have to take on this caretaker role. To, you know, that'd be the only role that I took on. As a mom, you are a caretaker, but that's not the only role I get to take on. Like, I also get to have needs. I also get to have wants. I also get to do my own thing, and I don't have to feel bad about it. And I can stand up for myself. And
Hey, friend, just a quick note. I am a licensed therapist, but this podcast isn't therapy. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anything. It's here to offer you support, encouragement, and real conversation. If you're struggling, please reach out to a trusted professional. You are not alone, and you are so worthy of healing. Wow. What a great conversation. Ashley's courage and her softness and her willingness to tell the truth. It all reminds me that healing is never about perfection. It's about presence. It's about choosing ourselves after years of being silenced and learning that we're allowed to take up space again. If her story resonated with you, share this episode with someone who needs to know they're not alone. Because this is how we change the narrative, one brave story at a time. And as always, you matter, your story matters, your voice matters, and you're not that girl anymore. Even if your voice shakes, keep using it. Your healing matters. If you're ready to go deeper, you can book a session by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting our website, embraceyourbrave.org, to learn more about our therapy and trauma-informed coaching options. Let's explore how we can walk this journey together. You are not alone. Embrace your brave, sis. You're not that girl anymore.